to Turbin. Turbin's in for the touchdown.
Have fun, play with some heart, play with passion.
Turbin is in. He gets the call. On second down and goal, and pushes it through, and the Colts have scored a touchdown.
My co-host Bridget Case. Let me introduce our guest to my right, Malik Jackson, starting defensive end for the Philadelphia Eagles. What's up, Malik?
What's up, big dog?
I like the attire.
Appreciate
coming
that,
to America. You about to be the king.
Taking over America.
To my bottom right, I feel it. To my bottom right, I got the one and only B Wags, Bobby Wagner, all pro linebacker.
He's actually
for the
in
Seattle
the middle.
Seahawks.
What's to up, everyone B-Wags? Else.
Well, he's to my right. I want y'all to know I'm representing. Can y'all see that behind me?
I appreciate that.
I know it's Denver. I know it's Denver, Malik. We didn't come a long way though, you know.
It's up there. So
it's up there.
I gotta
represent my folks, man. To our bottom left. One of the founders of the Black Lives Matter movement of Long Beach, correct?
Sure.
Right. James Marks, how you doing, boss? Welcome to the show.
Say, I'm doing, man. It's an honor to be here amongst y'all.
I really appreciate you guys, man. We got a lot to cover. We got a great conversation to talk about. We've been doing these roundtables, really getting into the, you know, what's going on in our nation as it pertains to the protests, ever since the thing with, you know, that happened with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, et cetera, all the names that have been going on. We've had different guests on the show. We've had police officers on the show, attorneys on the show, sharing perspectives, different perspectives, learning about, you know, how it goes in the legal system from an attorney and what are some of the, you know, the things that cops are doing when we had the officer on the show. So it's really been great to get these different perspectives. This is something that we want to continue today. We'll obviously get into some other stuff, but I want to start today with a fun fact.
All right? Gosh.
Oh, yeah. We're going to start today with a fun fact. Taco Tuesday. Everybody's familiar with Taco Tuesday.
You know it's Thursday, right?
I know it's Thursday. I know it's Thursday.
Okay.
But, you know,
all right.
but
I mean, I'm here with a White Claw. It's not a Margarita Monday, you know, Taco Tuesday. This is a White Claw day. We want to get to Friday, you know?
It is what it is.
Let's go. Move it along. All right.
But do you know where the Taco Tuesday, where it originated from?
The phrase?
Yeah.
No.
All right. Legally, it's owned by Taco John's. All right, which is a national taco chain based in Wyoming. Okay, they've issued hundreds.
I don't know if I'd trust to eat tacos in Wyoming.
They've issued hundreds of cease and desist letters demanding companies to stop holding Taco Tuesdays, obviously to no avail. So that's your fun fact of the day, Taco Tuesdays from Wyoming.
Now I'm just hungry for tacos, Rob. You did that to us.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go up to Wyoming and get you some Rocky Mountain oysters.
What?
What?
That's what you. That's what you get when you go up to Wyoming.
Nah, I said
look it up.
He goes and hangs out with Kanye West. You know,
Well, James, I want to start with you. You know, you're the founder of the BLM movement of Long Beach. How did that come about for you? What are some of the things that you guys have been doing over the course of this year, the protests and everything?
Oh, man. Well, a good friend of mine named Don Marcus, she started her, Audrina Richmond, and some more females. And I saw how they were out there putting their bodies on the line, standing up for men. And I noticed that there wasn't really too many men being involved in it for whatever reason, you know, whether it was different ideologies or principles of tradition. Have you not? And my thing was, in so many movements, we've always seen the way there's always been something, whether it was a religion, where you go back to Martin and Malcolm, whether it was like, hey, I'm a Muslim, you're a Christian, that separated the movement from getting strong. So me, I just said, well, I'm going to get behind these sisters because they're out there fighting for me.
Did we lose him?
I don't know. He froze there. But I feel what he's saying. Oh, we're reconnecting. I mean, everyone's switching around here.
Can you hear me?
Oh, there we go. James, you're back. Continue, please.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so yeah. So I've always had a passion, you know what I mean, for community as well as the empowerment of black people. And I'm someone that has really experienced systemic racism on all levels, from being involved in the juvenile system, seeing different things in the South and hearing different folk tales from my family in the South. And that right here in Long Beach, we're doing some great things, man. You already know we're shaking the city up right now. We're doing we've been able to be real progressive. We have a thing that's going on right now called the Framework for Reconciliation. That's reconciliation and reparations for the blacks, because Long Beach is one of the most racist societies that there is in Long Beach. Let me give you a few examples. For the last 15 years, blacks have been getting displaced out of the city of Long Beach at an alarming 10% rate each year. So now we remain to only be 12.9% of the population. And then when you look at every statistical category that there is, blacks, when it comes to everything's good, blacks are at the bottom for poverty, home ownership, school dropout, incarceration, recidivism, and all that. But when you look at the statistical categories of everything that is bad, we're at the top. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's been a ride. Not only that, concerning the reconciliation, the framework, but we're also getting system change. When people think of Black Lives Matter, they only think of, these people are out here, you know, just out here protesting. No, it's much deeper than that. We're addressing state-sanctioned police murders, police immunity. We're addressing different things in the system that exacerbate and promote racism and preserve it as well. Not only that, but here in Long Beach, we've also been able to affect change to the fact that we have what you have here called the Citizens of Police Complaint Commission, to where you have, that is when you file a complaint against the police officers, then it goes to the Internal Affairs. From there, it goes to the CPCC.
This is something that wasn't there before.
And this system here has been a corrupt system. It's been in place for 30 years. But now let me give you this. When you file a complaint against the police, it goes to Internal Affairs. Internal Affairs sends it to the Citizen of Police Complaint Commission. Mm-hmm. And guess who makes the determining factor of what happens? The city manager and the city attorney. Come on now,
what we learned last week from an attorney is that those city attorneys, the guys that you mentioned, actually work with the police. I mean, they go to lunch and things like that together, right? So it's difficult. I mean, think about it. It's like it's difficult to put your quote unquote friend, right, behind bars over something that they did, whether it was legal or illegal. Malik, I want to go to you here. Do you think we're making progress at all since the George Floyd murder with the movement?
First, thanks for having me. Do I think we're making progress? I think we are. Personally, for me, I feel like it's a little slow. I understand the, judicial system and all that, and things have to go in a certain way. But when you have people shooting through a door and killing a woman in her own bed, and then you have four people laying on a man's body and killing him as he's pleading for them, I don't understand what's taking so long. So for me, it's it needs to be hurried up, and we need to get some real answers, because unless we put those people behind bars, then I don't think it's going to be worth anything. And it's kind of funny, because black people are still being killed even after that. So yeah,
right,
it's one of those things.
Arizona,
that,
the guy in Arizona, et cetera.
Yeah. So yeah, it's one of those things, like, you know, what's really changing, you know?
You know, there's been things coming out. There's been all these petitions and things like that you can sign, right, to try to help with what's going on, to bring justice, for some of the people some of these victims, really, who have been killed, some of the families. Bobby, do you think those are really effective? And if not, what are some of the things perhaps that you feel would be effective for the movement moving forward?
I think some of those things are effective, because I feel like, the families, as you know, come from, not much. So, any financial help, I feel will help them, as long as they actually get in the money, because a lot of people have some of these funds and maybe they don't get to see, the money. And so as long as they're seeing the money, I feel like it would help. But I think what would help everything would, you know, police stop killing black people. I think that'd be, you know, the biggest help. But I feel like it's a lot going on, kind of like what Malik was talking about. Like, do we feel like things are changing? You know, you might feel or see a little bit of a change, but it's not much. It's not moving at a pace that it should be moving. People are still getting killed. You know, police officers are still being put on cameras. You know, we're seeing new videos every single day, you know, even after all this. So it's almost like they took it as a challenge to see, you know, maybe they, I don't know what they're doing it for, what the reason it is. I feel like, you know, it starts in your city, it starts in your community. You got to work on your community and, you know, go from there. But, you know, if you take a snapshot of what's going on right now and rewind it to about 2016, literally the same type of killings are happening. So,
wow.
1980s.
You know, yeah, even that. And I'm just saying, this is 2016. And so there was a little bit of a different, I feel like there was a little bit of a different response, probably because of coronavirus, probably because people are not working and they got, you know, their eyes and maybe time. But, you know, my thing that I'm interested to see is what happens when the world starts back up again. There's no coronavirus anymore. Will people still have that same attention and will people still be focused on trying to make something and do something to better this community in this world, really?
Right.
I think to say something to Bobby's point about getting paid, I think a lot of people think they can just throw money at people. You know, I mean, coming from where I came from, if I wasn't as well taken care of as I am, $100,000 would seem like gold to me. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think the state, and really, it's our tax money going to pay for these issues. So it's one of those things that I feel like, I think the money thing is an issue. You know, maybe when we had to stop hazing, you know, if you haze, they took your money or they put you out. You know, it's one of those things. I think the same thing needs to be to them. You know, I was, excuse me, watching Trevor Noah, and I know this, but, you know, police get incentives for interacting with gang members or giving out tickets. You know, it's one of those things that there's incentives to
right
to put people down.
So they have a quota to meet by the end of the month.
Yes, and I feel like you're supposed, and I read Guy Fawkes at Concourse, that's to protect and serve, yet a third of the population is scared to death when they ever see a black and white car. You know, I'm good. You know what I'm saying? I have no guns in my car, no drugs, you know, but every time I see a cop, I'm like, damn. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's one of those things, like, I hope it can change soon, but just throwing money at people, I feel like seems to be a thing they do, and it sucks because it's my tax money getting paid to these people. So
perhaps that's one of the things that could be changed. We haven't had that topic on our show yet as it pertains to the police, as it pertains to the quota. Why is there a quota? Why does there even need to be one? Say, you need to write this many tickets per month in order for your salary to be, you know, I don't know the rules behind it, right? But yeah, if they don't meet a certain quota, I'm sure there's some sort of penalty perhaps behind that. Maybe that's something
I feel like it goes to the whole reason why the cops are mad that they want to be defunded. And I think defunded is a term with a lot of things under it. But
what does defunded mean to you?
To me, reallocate, right? If you want to sit here, we can sit here and reallocate funds, put funds back in the community, and stop giving these cops incentives. You know, I think the reason why they do that is because they get funding from the government. I guess the worse your community, the more money, the more SWAT gear you get. I personally don't know, but it seems to me when you got people processing and then you got all this riot gear, you know, it's kind of overwhelming for people just, you know, trying to stand up for something they believe in. So
then do you believe more in reform? Would you say reform is the right word? Or do you think, because most people who say defund,
yes,
I mean, they really want to get rid of the police and go for a community type situation.
That ain't going to work.
You know, the neighborhood watch.
I mean, basically,
Go ahead.
In a real world, eventually we like that, but we know that's not possible. So when
right,
we talk about defunding, we talk about divesting and reinvesting, because when you look at the majority of the police forces, they're getting at least 48 to sometimes 60% of the budget. And then when you say, you look into the community programs, we're saying, okay, they're getting called to do work. The mental health workers and community intervention workers that went to school, got degrees, they can't even get jobs because the police are overstaffed and over doing too much overtime answering these calls that they don't even really want, but they want to control the budget. And so when we talk about defunding the police, that's what we're talking about, reinvesting into community intervention, community neighborhood programs for kids, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Counseling at schools, because I think like what Buddy said, in his youth, you know, we sit here and we know these kids have problems at home and in school and on the streets, but we just let them keep walking. I know when I was in high school, I never saw my counselor. You know what I mean? Whether it be a stigma thing or just standoffish. But if, you know, if you, as kids, we're going to talk to you if you're cool and you're with us and we feel you're with us. So, you know, I think it's that. But instead, we have cop cars at school. You know, it's all about force. And then you wonder why these kids see things and then they go do it, you know? So it's, I don't know.
Well, James, one of the most infamous cases that I remember in Long Beach was when Brian Banks was arrested and put in jail for, was rape. And, you know, guys, like, obviously, you know, he was a football star and had a scholarship to USC. And then I know, even later on, got an NFL tryout and some time with the team. But seriously, like, to me, that was such a local case at the time, and something that was so mishandled by law enforcement in the community. And of course, there were apologies and such, but not enough to really, you know, bring back somebody's life. And this is a good kid here. When you hear something like that, where it might not be something that's, you know, a guy who's out maybe driving around and a cop's taking him, but it's somebody who needs to listen to somebody's word. Right? And racism comes into play. Where does your mind go?
Ooh, my mind just relives so many different incidents and traumas that have been, my community has been under. When we talk about Long Beach Police again, we talk about a few years back, they were the fifth most violent police force in the country. Now, I believe they're the second most violent after Fresno in the state of California itself. So when I hear about that, I also think about the state-sanctioned murders, such as my partner Dante Jordan, so many other people that have been killed and murdered by the police. I also think about my first incident at 12 years old, getting sitting on a bus stop, waiting on some females to go home, and we're just being gentlemen, waiting on them to go home, and the police pull up, drive on the curb, put our hands behind our back, put our hot heads on the hot police car. You know, I mean, there's so many different incidents that we think of outside of the Brian Banks case here that involves police brutality and police mistreatment of community.
Right. I mean, absolutely. When you guys hear something like that, do you recall, Bobby, Emily, do you recall a time where racism really came to the forefront and you realized, oh my gosh, like, this is real? Because Rob and I have had this conversation so many times. There comes a point when you become an NFL player or a celebrity, a type of star, where people think, oh, you don't experience racism as much, but that's not really true.
No, it's not true. People always say, boo hoo, the rich guy's crying. You don't have nothing to worry about.
I've heard the term also, you're not black enough. I've heard that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that I just think, you know, you watch Boys in the Hood and all these movies. I think it's one of those things. These people just took a page out for my guy's partner in Long Beach. They just took a page. It seems like the whole, like, we never learned from the Emmett Till situation. Right. We've been getting lied on. We've been getting treated. We've been getting being assumed we're a certain way, and it's overwhelming. You know, it sucks, and it needs to change, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, as it pertains to the league, you know, the NBA, they kind of did this thing where their players, now that they're at the bubble for the games, they can put something on the back of their jersey as, you know, representing something from the BLM movement. We haven't heard anything from our owners in pro football.
Chairman.
You know, I'm sorry?
Our chairmen.
And so does that, you know, Bobby, does that make you feel, you know, some type of way, uncomfortable perhaps, that, hey, you know, the chairmen of our team are perhaps not in support of us? And the second part to that question, too, is, you know, should the NFL do something similar to the NBA where players can, you know, be open and speaking out? I know they do like the My Cleats in week 13 and stuff like that, but perhaps something every week that they can do representing the movement.
Honestly, I don't feel like it makes me feel any type of way because I feel like people that are not connected to the situation, I can't expect them to feel the way that I feel. But For me, it's just more so like, it's kind of like what Malik was talking about earlier. Sometimes like we get so caught up in this idea where it's like, I'm going to throw money at the situation. And once I throw a little bit of cash, you know, I've done my job. I'm good. Everything's all good. So same thing with the, you know, with the jerseys and all those different things. It's only temporary. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You put mm-hmm. a name of somebody that has been killed on the back of your jersey. You support them. You recognize them for that moment. And then what? You know, there can be people that could care less about anything that's going on that put a name on the back of their jersey and feel like they did enough. And so right. I think it's just, it's more like, don't miss the point. You know what I mean? The point is to, you know, affect positive change and, you know, get us moving in the right direction. Now, I think it's a great gesture, but all it is a gesture. It's mm-hmm. Something that's not sustainable, because then you get into the fact that there's way, way more people that's gotten killed than maybe the three headlines that we've seen recently. And so we can't just focus on, you know, right now. We have to make real change. That's from schools to economics for blacks to there's a lot of more impactful things that we can do. So my focus is not necessarily the representation of a name on the back of my jersey or things of that nature, because I feel we can do so much more if we get out there in the community.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, for the chairman, like Bobby put it, they're all hiding behind the shield and the logo. But besides Mark Cuban, I haven't heard too many owners come out, and I don't know if he has, but I'm sure he has, had too many individual owners come out and put their mouth or their money behind it. It's all, the NFL said, we're going to put, what, $120 million over 10 years. That's something like that. And in the number, if I looked it up, it was like it was $800,000 each owner. So, you know, when we're talking about things like this, it's like you guys are doing the bare minimum, right? Just to show, hey, I care, and you're hiding behind the shield. And as athletes, man, with that jersey thing, I think the NBA came up with six things they could put under the back of their jersey.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it would infuriate me seeing somebody else wear my son's name or my last name in that jersey when he should be out there doing that. You know what I'm saying? We're acting like I'm not that man. You know what I'm saying? I'm Malik Jackson, you know, so putting this man's name back in my jersey, yes, might bring, you know, make some people happy, but at the end of the day, he should still be alive to do what he wants to do. So I'm confused in putting a name on the back of the jersey.
Now, the league also said that, go ahead, James.
I want to add to what Malik and Bobby said. You can put a name, and this is something that we use down here in the community and what we call the hood. You put a name on the back of a shirt, on the front of a shirt, guess what? That does not ease the pain of what had happened to that family. That family, that pain is never erased. It's just like going to a funeral, losing someone you love, and the impact that they had in that family and that community. That does not erase anything. And then back to the NBA. They're so hypocritical when we talk about the NBA. They went through the same thing the NFL went through with Kaepernick maybe 15 to 20 years ago when my mentor, Craig Hodges, was banned from the NBA. And when Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf was banned because he didn't want to put his hand over his heart because he understood that third stanza was very hypocritical and racist within itself. So the NBA, they're hypocrites just like the NFL is.
Wow.
The only thing is, they addressed this issue maybe like 15 to 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And no one wants, so when we talk about these things, we have to be reminded of the context of history and the fact that how history plays an important part of this.
I also feel like the owners in the league need to come out and stop saying Black Lives Matter. We need a individualized statement, you know, because just saying Black Lives Matter, oh, that team is good, man. They're with us.
Yeah, well, no, everybody else is already saying that. So obviously, like, come on.
But nobody's doing anything.
Exactly. Where are your actions? I have a question. I have a question for all of you guys. Honestly,
Hold on. Go ahead, Bobby.
I was just saying, the thing that we got to do is really just pay attention to what is the aftermath? Because after all of this happened, you've seen every corporation, every business, every team, everybody put out this amazing statement, good or bad. And it's like, what's the follow-up? Like, anybody can write a statement. Anybody can say, you know, say something. But it's like, what are your actions to follow that? Like, what are you doing to match the words that you put into paper? And so that's important too. Like,
and I agree
with, talk.
And I agree with you on that, Bobby. And that was part of the reason that I got with Black Lives Matter is because I seen the women putting their bodies and their lives and their freedom on the line and get, you know, just getting assaulted by the police. So I had to step up and get behind our sisters as well, because it's what you said. What are they doing other than words? There have to be some type of action. And that's what I say. So when you say that, when we see these women going out here saying Black Lives Matter, putting their lives on the line, and other races as well are partnering with us to do this. Now, we have to ask ourselves as men, and we got to go and talk about athletes. When will we take a stand for something and say, okay, just like when everyone tried to condemn Kyrie Irving recently, Kyrie said, no, we need to stay in this moment right here. We do not need to play sports. But everyone is going against him for whatever reason. You know, they're trying to book for position. Let's just call it what it is, you know.
So do you feel like the NBA shouldn't?
So when do people take a stand for something? I mean, we're out here taking a stand for our lives, and it's not even about me. It's about those who come behind me. I have a sports company. I can sit back and be comfortable. But guess what? One thing I cannot do is sit back and allow this place to be left the way I found it. And that's just being a man.
So you feel like the NBA shouldn't have a season? Oh, go ahead, Malik. Go ahead.
I feel like, you know, it's one of those things, to his point, we talk about, you know, athletes take a stance. If you were to ask me, what, 2013, I believe, when Kaepernick took his knee, mm-hmm. if I was doing it, I would have told you, hell no, because I don't have a check. I'm still trying to provide for my family. I've worked my whole life to get to this moment. You right. ask me this year, I'm with you. You know right. what I'm saying? I believe in it. I'm going to do whatever I can. I'm speaking out. But, you know, it comes with.
Is it because you're financially comfortable now? Is that the difference for you?
I think it's because I've learned. Like, it's not about.
I see.
One, yes, and two, because I've learned, like, you have to be willing to lose something. And back then, I just wasn't willing to, right?
Right.
So I was like, that's, you know, honest. What? But
that's
now,
real. That's real.
But now I'm like, you know what? F this, bro. Like, I have a platform now. I built myself up. So if I say something, I can care less what people think. You know what I'm saying? I'm here now. I'm awoke, and you know, I'm ready to do my part. You know, speak out for the people that are young and that want to say something. But the what did you call the owners? The chairman.
The chairman are alienating
people. You know what I'm saying? No, I agree with that term, bro. I'm gonna start using that myself. They alienate people, right? So it's one of those things. Hey, you can stand for BLM, right? Like, you got the owners. We'll take knees. We'll stand together. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. We'll right. see.
Bridge, you we'll had a question, guys, that you wanted to ask earlier.
Well, I mean, before I ask what I was going to ask, now that you bring this up, Malik, I am so interested with how higher members of Congress, maybe mostly older people in the more like 70s, 80s range. I'm thinking like Nancy Pelosi and a lot of people who are on TV and in the media a lot. When I saw them kneeling in the, and Malik, I'm going to mess this up. I can't pronounce it. What is it called? The Shikis? It's the colorful scarves. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay. Yeah, I understand.
Yes, thank you. So when there were a bunch of white people kneeling down and thinking that that was their way of taking action, to me, like I am a little bit confused and seeing like, well, is that really like something that, you know, says, oh, you know, Black Lives Matter? Or is that just a photo op, a stunt, you know?
The same thing the president did when he moved out, all those people out to go to the church. You know, mm-hmm. when you have power, they have true power in this country, right? Bobby has power, I have power, Robert has power, you have power, you guys have this show, it's a platform. But the people that have true power, just to say, I'm going to take a knee, it's one of those things, like, you know, it's almost a joke, you know? It's like,
exactly, like that's the thing.
Stand with us, make laws, right? If you stand right. with us, change it, because they drive through the same neighborhoods, right? And it's funny, we celebrate Juneteenth. We got out of slavery a long time ago.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So to be still asking people to make laws or stop beating us, you know,
well, and a lot of African Americans didn't even know what Juneteenth was until this year.
Yep, and that's a shame.
That's real. That's real. So, you know, James, you talked about the NBA. You know, do you feel like just going back for a second? I think you cut out. Oh, there he is. Do you think the NBA shouldn't have a season? You think the season shouldn't happen? for the movement.
No, I don't think it should happen at all. I don't think no sports should happen right now. I think the whole world, I think when we look at the COVID and everything else, I think that
let's not even take COVID into consideration. Let's just say,
but I have to look at the movement. I look at outside the box. I look at that happened for a reason to slow everything down to get to this moment. Nothing that is happening is happening by happenstance.
Not as many people would be out protesting if COVID didn't happen.
Excuse me?
Oh, I just was commenting on your point that not as many people would be out protesting if COVID weren't apparent.
I don't know if that to be true, though.
No, because think about it. People are home. People aren't in the office. Lots of people have lost their jobs. So a lot of people have more time.
But that George Floyd, video was horrifying.
No, absolutely. But I agree with her.
I agree with her wholeheartedly, man. It's one of those things when that young boy got killed by Trayvon Martin got killed.
Yep.
Oh, wow. And then that was a young man walking the street. You know what I'm saying? Like doing his own, minding his own business, And people went to work, because I think the one thing we have to say, one death is a tragedy. A million is a, wait, one. Anyway, yeah, I just
think I know you're gone.
Yeah, we just have to just like and, just stop and for a minute. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bigo.
I think he's frozen. I think he's frozen. Yeah, go ahead.
Trayvon Martin, man. Crazy. So, but go ahead, bro.
Organizing and strategizing to get to this moment. We didn't just stop with the movement. Black Lives Matter didn't just stop. Although everyone else stopped and went back to their normal everyday lives, we did not stop. We kept strategizing from Australia to China to Africa, preparing to mobilize in this moment right here. And it just so happened to be George Floyd that sparked this moment. But we have never stopped the work. When you go down here in LA, every Wednesday we're down here. Fire Jackie Lacey. We're at these crooked politicians. We're at their doors every week, two or three times a week, and sometimes 7 days a week. We're camping out in front of their yards requesting policy change. And those are the things behind the scene that people aren't seeing. So this is none of this is happening chance. These things that are happening were already written, and they were already prepared and strategized to happen. It just so happened they're happening in this moment.
Let me ask you this. Since you being one of the founders of the BLM movement in the Long Beach area, some people believe that the movement is scarce per se, for lack of a better word. It's communistic. It's owned by people who really don't have good intentions at heart. What's your response to that? Have you heard that, first of all? And secondly, if you have, what's your response to that? Amen. Yeah, boy. Froze on us again.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we got you.
Are you with me? Let me tell you, man, I've heard everything you could possibly think of. And I'll tell them that's all lies. We're out here taking care of ourselves, funding ourselves, creating our own streams of income coming in. And some of these women who are doing it, they're business owners and moms, everyday people. So let me tell you, you can't believe everything that you hear in the Long Beach chapter.
I think every time a black person tries to step up and talk for his community and in doing so, condemn or talk about another group of people, it's always put down as he's being this, he's being that, when you're just proving a point and you're telling it how it is. Nobody wants to hear the truth. People don't want to. You talk about slavery, they say, get over it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. But if we can have a hard talk about the past and where we are now and how it's similar to how we're supposed to move forward. So, yeah.
Very, very well said. Absolutely. I think some people are confused, though, because they don't understand the difference between the movement and the foundation, right? So James, like, how do you explain that to people?
Good question.
The difference between a movement and a foundation.
The Black Lives Matter Foundation.
What with Black Lives Matter?
Okay, the difference between a movement and a foundation. A movement is something that is continuous, as I just spoke of, that you don't see the things that are happening behind the scene, the organizing, the strategizing, the continuous continuing to call out these oppressive and systemic racist systems that exacerbate, trying to tear down these infrastructural systems that continue to promote and preserve racism. And then we talk about the foundation. The foundation is the heart of the people, where it has always been. You cannot, and it always goes back to the intent. And let us just not say nothing that this is just, this is nothing that has just started. The foundation started back in the 50s, 60s. Not only that, it started way back in 16 and 1800 when slaves were jumping off into the Atlantic, trying not to come over here to be bound by these conditions. The foundation was laid during the rebellions of Nat Turner, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, so many different, Nelson Mandela. The foundation has always been laid. We're just a continuum of that foundation, standing on their backs, their shoulders, and walking in the footsteps of greatness, continuing that. Mm-hmm. So the foundation mm-hmm. has always been there.
Well, see, but to say that, I feel like to say that, I feel like it's weird because, like, and I'm just saying, I think, like, for example, right, we talked about the 1950s. If you grow up now, I think a white person that feels like, you know, they're supposed to be in power, they say, well, why am I giving up my power now? You know what I'm saying? Why should my son not have this? Why should my grandkids? You know, this is my right. You know, my daddy taught me that. My granddaddy taught him that. So it's one of those things, like, those ideas are passed down. And so when the person can get in power to make change, it's almost like, well, my daddy had it, so I don't see the issue with it. You know what I'm saying? So I personally think it's something like that, man. Like, we have to, just, you know, in schools, they're not even teaching Black history. We have it for, what, a month? You know what I'm saying? And they don't tell you about slavery. I believe now they're telling kids it was a unpaid internship, you know, but we know all these other people's history.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Look it up, man. They're not telling the real story about slavery, is my point. It's outrageous. But my point is that's the problem, right? All we know about Black people, I feel like, in the past is that there was slavery and they're lazy, right? That's all you hear about, right? That's what I hear, right? So it's like, if we don't tell people who we are, how we worked, how we came up from the ashes, how once we got free, we did this, did that, then people aren't, the mindset isn't going to change. So we have to start teaching.
One thing to add to that, and be quick. All I say is, sometimes I feel like, you know, we feel like we started with slavery. Mm-hmm. Like that's where we pick up on the timeline. That's not the case. We was kings, we was pharaohs. And, you know what I'm saying, it was queens. So let's make sure we remember that. You know, we have a spiritual, very deep connected to some powerful, powerful people, powerful, powerful beings. And so there's a reason why they try to disconnect you from that connection.
Why do you think there's such a disconnection, Bobby?
Fact that.
Because I feel like there's... you know, they see the potential if we tap into that type of power. They don't want us to tap into that type of energy, that type of spirit. You know, they want us to see what we were before all this happened. So, you know, that can be a long conversation, honestly.
Yep. And I agree with you. Even when you go into the school book and look at the racism in school, when they say, or even in the media, when they talk about Martin Luther King being killed, he wasn't killed. He was assassinated by a racist. Mm-hmm. Let's tell it like it is. And it takes having a real conversation and looking at the things that they, the way they are, and let's stop sugarcoating them.
Absolutely. I do want to shed light on, you know, some of the things that have been transpiring in our nation from a positive standpoint as it pertains to the movement. You see some states, some counties, some cities are doing what they can. We had a police officer out of Kansas. Their department developed, you know, he became, I think it's called basically he's like a teacher. Like
he's a training officer.
Thank you, a training officer. So new officers come in, you know, his job is obviously, you know, train them to be officers, you know, in the right way. Now, obviously, you're always going to get some guys coming in with certain mindsets. They want to be one way only. And perhaps you want to try to weed those guys out of there. But there are some counties, some cities, states trying to make some changes in a positive way as it pertains to the police and the movement. So things do improve over time. Now, I know that we don't really want to be like our patience is run thin over hundreds of years. But it does look like to me, just a little bit, that things are kind of tilting in that direction. As long as we keep, you know, our foot on the gas pedal, I think we'll start to see some things start to turn over in our favor.
I don't know if I should be excited it's in Kansas or if I should be, it's just Kansas. I mean, I don't even know what the black population is in Kansas. You know what I'm saying? So
right. If
we can leave these to coastal cities, maybe the Bible Belt, right? People always want to be all super religious and stuff, but it's the South. So
right. If
we can move those some places where there's a lot more black people, then I feel happy about that. And I'll thank that guy in Kansas. You know, let's just start 100%. Spreading this.
So. Yeah. Yeah. He actually, you know, he talked about, you know, he actually, you know, wanted me to pray for, he asked me to pray for him so that he would do a good job. You know, he's like, man, pray for me. I want to do a good job. I want to do right by the, not just his department, but police in general, you know? Yeah. And, you know, it was a great conversation. He talked about like cops when they're young and, you know, they struggle with, you know, the older, the veteran cops having a little bit more power. So if they see something that's
kind of like
right,
Malik, you know, how you said you wouldn't have kneeled back in the day.
Yeah. You know, they have that, that same,
but that's different though, because they have a right to do the right thing. They're sworn by oath to do the right thing.
Right.
I get paid to put people in the dirt and tackle a guy with the ball. So it can't be the same thing. You know, I just can't accept that because that's their job, to protect and serve. They are civil servants, I believe I use that right term. So like,
100%.
Start acting like that. So,
yeah. 100%. Well, we're going to have a new guest coming on, Dr. Kamoya Johnson. She is, she's the manager at Restorative Justice Program out of Oakland, California. She's going to come in and share some insight. But until she comes on, I kind of want to transition, you know, to some NFL stuff. Let's talk about the season. Season coming up, 2020. Obviously, we've been dealing with COVID and everything like that. And we'll get back to, we'll go back and talk about some of the, you know, social injustice stuff once she comes on. But are we going to have a season? If so, do you feel like it's going to last the entire season? And do you feel like we even should? Bobby, I'll start with you.
We'll definitely have a season. I feel like there's too many billions on the line. You can tell the way the chairmans are negotiating, you know, that they don't want to lose out on this money. So they're going to find a way to make it possible. You know, they've been very... they've been very focused on making sure they're not the ones to change the deadline to push anything back. They want to be the ones that are able to kind of fight this thing. A thing that, you know, not too many people seem to be winning against. But I would be surprised if we didn't have a season for that simple fact. But there's a lot of things that goes into it. Player safety, you know, the health of the guys that's being out there. There's so much that goes into it. So, you know, at the end of the day, players do have to look out for themselves because you can tell by our negotiations where the minds of the chairmen are at.
When you have people out here and obviously, like, you know, you talk to some people, it's like, look, if you're between the ages of this and that, you have nothing to worry about. You'll get sick. You'll get healthy. That's not the case. I know the percentages of deaths are really low, but when you have that there, I mean, the opportunity is there where you could possibly pass away. Is it worth risking everybody's life essentially for a season?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, that's a very heavy question. You know what I'm saying? You know, at the end of the day, talk about the people that you're speaking to. Majority of leaders black, majority of leaders come from nothing. And so, you know, a lot of people are trying to support and take care of their families and, you know, generationally change the financial situation of their family. So,
I mean,
it's not as easy of a question to answer. Yeah.
Well, I asked that question sitting here ready to play.
If
the opportunity presented itself for me, I'd be willing and ready to go. Yeah. but you know, would want some sort of guideline, obviously, for us to be able to get out there and play. You know, Leak, you had some interesting things to say on your Instagram the other day. Hadn't heard anything from the league. They hadn't put out any statements. You talked about, like, listen, you can't be 6 feet away from the right tackle coming around the edge, sacking a quarterback. What's your take?
Yeah. I think I have to piggyback on what B Wag said. They won the season. It's about money. I think it's an interesting thing for me when you look at American businesses. It's my understanding that the NFL got small business loans, I believe $15 million each. And it's funny when we talk about how much millions the team is going to lose when they're going to get bailed out by the government. So it's one of those things that, you know, we sit here and we can talk about how much money they're going to lose and when this and that. But, you know, back to the first point we made, when we have nobody that looks like us in those meetings, how can we truly say these people care about us? You know, it's a monetary thing. We've been going through these meetings, fairly no new information at all. We always hear it's a negotiation, but how can you negotiate my health, right? What is there to negotiate? Put some stipulations, put some things down to where if I can opt out, or if I do get sick, I get this, you know, if I do get sick, I can't get cut. You know, it's just so many things. And I believe the NFL is only looking at monetary. But for me, somebody who pays attention to politics, you're going to get bailed out. Now, you might lose a little bit, but at the end of the day, it's still America's number one sport. It's not going to go anywhere. So, you know, it's hard, man. You know, and especially on my post, I also said, I believe every owner is over 40, and I doubt they'll be in the building with us. You know, they'll be wherever they are, drinking their Mai Tais or their White Claws, having a good time, making money. You know what I'm saying? So, like, to put me in the situation that you wouldn't put yourself or your kids in, is messed up. But then, you know, we play in the NFL. When have we ever followed rules? You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things that's who we are. You know, we go back, they're going to say, you know, if the NFLPA told us, you know, if things aren't up to par with the health code, you know, tell us and we'll file a grievance. Yeah, but I think these NFL coaches are going to say, hey, this is the best we can do. You know, what are you going to tell a young guy, right, that's going in his third year that's about to make his check? What do you think you're going to do? You know what I'm saying? Well, you got somebody like yourself who's itching, ready to play, right? If I sit out, or you think somebody else isn't going to come behind me and play? Oh, I'll play for $100,000. Shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, to get the opportunity. So, you know, it's like the movie The Replacements. You know, there's already been a movie about this. You know, they're going to bring guys in to do the job, to get over this, and then they'll move on. So, they don't care about us.
And James, you know, I know that you had a stance earlier in the show about, listen, I don't think the NBA should have a season, so I'm sure you don't feel like the NFL should have a season. But what do you say to the guys who essentially need to take care of their families? You know, they can't afford to sit out a season. Now, I know the NBA are giving their players the option, and it seems like if they opt to sit out, they'll still get their salary. I don't think the NFL will be so kind. They've never been so kind like that. Never. You know, and so
they're paying B-Wags what, 30 a year, B? You think they're gonna let that boy sit out? Yeah, all right.
You know? Guaranteed. You know? They should, in my opinion.
They should.
If a player is like, listen, I've got a kid with pneumonia or asthma or whatever, I don't want to risk it for my family. They should take care of the player. Absolutely 100%. But we know they're not going to do that. James, what do you say to that? I know that you want to focus on the movement and COVID and everything like that, but what about the guys that need to take care of their families?
I say this, and you have DeMar Smith, who's the head of the NFLPA, correct? So I think that, all right, and then they just did, what was it, the collective bargaining this year or last year? Okay, so now within that time, not only this time, but the last CBA, this should have been a system devised to prepare guys, not only that, but not only to prepare them, but also to give them an outlet and some support in times like this, in case there's a social cause that comes about, or even an emergency, to where, you know, they're paying dues to do that. So then me, I have to look at, again, at the leadership. Who's leading these young men? You know what I mean? Like, who's sitting there to allow, and that's, and again, that's why I started my sports and brand development company, was because I would see, and I come from Long Beach Poly High, Sports Illustrated School of the Century. We put out more NFL players than any school in the century. And what I noticed was this, as a trainer and a mentor of these young men, was that a lot of these young men would go on to the collegiate level, go get degrees that didn't mean anything, go on to the professional ranks, play 2, 3, 4, 5 years, come back, didn't manage their monies right. But guess what? When they came back, I had to look at them. Them was my partners or my homeboys. Them was their nephews, their sons, or someone else in their family, or just someone I knew from the community. So I would end up mentoring them, helping them to get their, how can I say it, to get their confidence back, to put them on, redirect them and put them back on the right track. So what I noticed was this, was that it was almost like for better terms, I would say pimp and prostitute system from what I saw. I would see these when they get to college, these coaches would introduce them to their cronies. They would meet people that didn't look like us, wasn't from our culture, didn't care nothing about these young men after they retired, and they would use them up and wouldn't prepare them for life after. And then they would send them back to the community. So I blame the players association, as well as those around them. And I think even me as an older man in this community, I have an obligation to look out for the younger men that come through the same ranks that I come through. So I think the older players, you know, I don't know exactly. Like, I know B-Wag, as I said, he's done a lot of great stuff. He helped my guy Rashad Penny, taught him the ropes, and Rashad's doing great things with his family and the community out here. But I think it has to be a collective of men that just say, hold up, this is what we have to do. We have to prepare for war, because understand, we're all living in a war that we were born into, and this war can start at any given time. But we have to prepare those who are coming into the league, and not only in the league, but those who are being born into this life, to understand this.
Now, I will say this, you know, you mentioned, you know, there should have been something in the CBA in preparation for, I would argue and say that it's hard to prepare for something that has never happened before in our lifetime.
But you as a leader, you as a leader and an elder, you understand life in itself. There's nothing new under the sun. So you can't say nothing has ever happened. Hey, they've been killing us forever. Hey, they've been getting ready to go on strike how many times? So there should have been systems in play to where even when they do say, okay, there's a holdout, guys don't have to go and get these gassed up loans, these predatory loans that they get from banks. Do you understand what I'm saying? There has to be something, and you have to start with the leadership, because that's what leadership does. They have vision and see things that happen before they happen, whether they happen or not. Just like the guys that's on this panel, hey, they're professional players, but guess what? They're visionaries. They see, hey, I want to prepare and make something better for my kids and my great-great-grandkids that I'll never see, so I'm going to sacrifice my body and everything that it takes. That's visionaries, and if not, then you need to get rid of it and put someone else at the helm.
Like, do you agree? Do you feel like there could be – oh, go ahead, Bobby.
No, I'm just agreeing with
you. Oh, yeah. I mean, do you feel there could be improvement with our P? I mean, I feel like there's a lot of things that they do that is really great. I mean, I've gone to DC. I've been at the offices. Some of the things that I've been able to do with my MBA, stuff like that, have come through the PA. Sometimes the younger players aren't really attentive to the opportunities that are presented to them by the PA, but obviously there may be some things that they can improve, especially from a leadership standpoint. I'm not really high on our leadership to be
quite honest. I think the NFLPA, oh my bad, go be like,
no, you good.
I think we have to understand NFLPA is gonna tell you, oh, it's not our job, we do enough, you know, and I'm not trying to and we're not talking bad about the PA, but you know, we have to be real, you know. And they probably tell you, Malik, come to our office, we'll show you what we do. You know, they give us opportunities to go meet people and do things, and I get that, but you shouldn't start when I'm here, right? If you're getting these kids out of college and that's your pipeline, then you need to show these kids how to write a check, how to pay a rent, how to save. If you had $100, save 20, save 80 and spend 20. You know what I'm saying? Like we need to start lower, because all these kids say, even me, when I was growing up, I'm gonna get this. I'm gonna get this, not understanding who Uncle Sam is. You know what I'm saying? You have Uncle Sam you never met until you start making money. Who your family is, who your agent is. You just have so many vultures coming out. And I think it's up to, and to the agent point, we have so many people that don't look at like us ever representing us. And as you get through the NFL, you realize these people are snakes and truly clowns, you know, just predators. But the NFL still allows them to work, still allows them to get on, still allows them to do people wrong, because the NFL chairmen are in cahoots with these guys, right? You give me a kid, right? Bobby Wagner, great talent, man. Second deal, hey man, let's do a deal. Let me get him for 50 mil max, 35 guaranteed. Come on, talk him into it. We can do some other deals. We'll do something else. All right, bet. I'm gonna talk to him. That gets done all the time. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's a lot of these. I guess it would be systematic to be a correct term, but I just think it just starts from the top down. You know, and we need to look at these college kids and start teaching them.
No, I agree with you, Malik. And now we have to take a deeper look inside of this. Okay, let's go into the Antonio Brown situation. Before he left the Steelers, he demanded, what was it? Guaranteed money. Guess what? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, his agent, who is in cahoots with the NFL, knows what he wanted. So therefore, his agent should have made sure that he had guaranteed money. He didn't say, I want guaranteed money with stipulations. He said, I want guaranteed money when I sign that thing. So in other words, these agents are being snakes. You know what I mean? So when he signed that contract, Drew Rosenhaus, who I've done work with, he knew that certain stipulations was on that contract, but he didn't make Antonio Brown aware of that. You know why? Because guess what? He's good friends with those NFL players, with those NFL owners, and he understands players come a dime a dozen. And when the players leave, guess what? He's still going to be doing.
Boy,
lost your audio right there.
Boy, got a thousand players, and how can you talk to 1,000 players if you're one guy?
Yeah, go ahead. If anybody knows contracts, it's Bobby. Go ahead, Bobby. You were going to say something.
Money. Talk to me.
I think that's kind of, you know, where we at with it. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, from a leadership standpoint, it's up to us as players that have been in the league to pass the knowledge down. But I think it's also on us as players to not rely on people as much. You know, we rely on the NFLPA. We rely on so many different people, to even agents, financial advisors, things of these nature. We rely on them people so much so that we handicap ourselves. And by the time we have, you know, like with that Antonio Brown situation, you say, you know, the guaranteed money, things of that nature. Like, as a player, you should understand your contract enough to where your agent shouldn't be able to get anything over on you. You should be able to catch that. You should be able to catch, you know, something that they're doing that you're not okay with. But we don't do a great enough job of educating ourselves on, the agents, financial advisors, anything like that. It's just a thing that we have to change, because you got to understand, like, we come from a lot of guys that come, you know, they come from nothing, make it to college, get through college, make it to the league. They go from having no money at all to having a lot of money. Instead of learning about how money works, they give it off to a financial advisor and trust them and let them do it. And you're not learning anything. So you don't really learn how to understand money. You don't really learn how to take care of your money. So by the time you're done with the league, like, say a guy plays 15 years. If you're 35, had millions, and at 35, you're just now starting to learn about money, it's too late. You know, same thing with the agency business. It's like, you know, you should never sign a contract you don't fully understand. If you don't fully understand, don't sign it. Or make, try to either educate yourself, or you should have an agent that you trust, that you feel like, he's going to tell you all the intricacies that goes into that contract. But kind of like to Malik's point, there's a lot of conversations that are happening with the agents and the chairmen, or the agents and the GMs, that you're not sitting on. So, you know, I always look at it as it's two negotiations. It's one with the agent and the team, and it's one with the agent and the player. But agent has to talk to the player. You're taking that deal.
Do you think that Patrick Mahomes then understood his contract, or that he got screwed over? I mean, but he is one of the most legendary agents in the league.
No NFL player should be worried about fielding a team. That's not the player's. That's not the player's job to worry about getting people around you. We come here for one thing. Yeah. That's to make money for our family and put it back in our communities. What the hell am I worried about getting Joe Schmo for? And they won't even get the Joe Schmo you want. You're not even in the decision-making room, right? So it's one of those things that that's a prime example. I'm glad you said that. I love his contract, 503, I believe. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Over 10. I don't agree with that. But, you know, for us, Bobby said, man, we're not all as cerebral, right? Nobody wants to say, oh, they see the big number. That's why when you get older, you see, oh, $100 million contract. Oh, shit, I made it. 20 guaranteed. It's like, come on, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's stop. And that's the problem with the NFL. It's, they throw the big number out there. He made $503 million over 10 Malik, with this much guaranteed. It's like, come on, man.
I would say that's not all the NFL. I think that's media. You know,
media. That's agent and media relationship.
Yeah.
Our agents have relationships with the media guys. So they say, hey, just say this. Give me that number.
The contract could be for 90-something million, and the agent can reach out to the media guy and say, hey, I want you to say 120.
Yeah.
And so they just see the number 120, but then you look at your contract, you're like, oh, man, it's $30 million missing, like, from what you said on the TV screen. Mm. So, you know, it's a deeper thing, man. It's just we have to be aware and we have to be conscious and we have to have intent and be mindful of what's going on around us. We can't be oblivious. We can't think that everybody is it's unfortunate, but we can't think everybody
on your
is
side.
On our side and wants to to build up, you know what I'm saying? Because even like in this world, you know, everybody's going to say the right thing, but will they do the right thing is the thing that you should pay attention to the most.
You know,
I feel like my bad.
No, go ahead, Malik.
I feel like the problem is in every business, right? There's 1,000 radio show hosts, there's 1,000 stores you can go to, there's 1,000 businesses that do the same thing, except when you get professional sports, there's one, right? They have the pipeline. We can't make any decisions. If you want to leave, where are you going to go? Canadian football? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing else to where we can really go to be like, you know what? I don't like this, so I'm going to go here. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can't do that. And that's so we're like, take it or leave it.
Do you think for a young player, you talk about understanding your contract. We talked about not being involved in the conversations when you're negotiating. Could a young player request to his agent, like, hey, I want to be on the phone. I want to be on three-way when you're negotiating my contract.
Of course.
I'm sure they can, but I don't know.
They don't know that. But they don't know that.
Of course. And I won't even go deep. I'm not going to go that. I'm not even going to like really dive into that. But at the end of the day, understand, they work for you. Yes. You don't work for them. So you pay them. So whatever it is that you want, you get. If you can't get it, don't pay them. Mm-hmm. Period. Like if you want to be in that meeting room and you want to be on that phone and you want to do whatever it is you want to do, you paying a person a percentage of your income. So if I'm paying you a percentage of my income, I get to say what goes down for that percentage of income. If it's something that you don't agree with or that's not what you want to do, then cool. Like you're not the person that I'm going to hire. I'm going to pick my person. And I think that's too. Like we can't settle for less. We got to hold people accountable to what they say.
100%.
And that's every facet of the world. You know what I'm saying? That's not even just football. That's
right.
That's a good point by Bobby. You know, or a good question. You know, I think it's one of those things when you get in the league, the agents make it feel like you work for them, right? Hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, this and that. But I think we definitely need to change that. But you know, we all know what it means. You know, you get that written contract, bam, it's set. As soon as you go for that second contract, you're going to find out what those people think about you. Mm-hmm. You're going to find out where they see you. And, yeah, I think, you know, it would be a good thing to sit in those meetings, you know, because now you really see what they have to say about you, what they think about you. They're always walking around that building, hey, how you doing, Malik? Oh, 3 years, you're good. Contracts? You want what? You're not worth it. How much is too much? Come on, man, let's work with us. You know what I mean? It's like, get out of here, bro, you know?
No, I agree with you, Malik and Bobby. You got the agents all in the video. You know what I mean? They need to come on over here to death row. No, seriously. But, Bobby, I think you negotiated your own contract, didn't you, Bobby, if I'm not correct?
I did.
Yes, sir. Okay, so now we talk about current and coming forward. This even happened just the other day when you had a guy like Nick Cannon. He's talking about he want his show back. Hold on, buddy. You signed that away, but you got a partner that's been your partner for 30 years. You mean to tell me? But you got to understand, Nick Cannon, just as we all know, entertainers, athletes, and workers. I work a 9-to-5, so we're all just a dime a dozen. We just Johnny come lately, so they don't care about us. But guess what? They're going to continue to do business, and we got to talk about racism because we have to. Because guess what? Those people 9 times out of 10 that are doing that, that's their skin color. And they have a name. Their last name is connected to that, the other people's origin of where they come from. So, again, we have to continue to educate our families and educate ourselves. And I say, what's the use in having people around you if they're not going to be of value and uplift you to where you don't have to worry about these things? But I think everyone should take the approach that Bobby took and educate themselves and learn about, hey, the intricacies of the deal. Because my saying is this: if I can make the money, I can keep it. Mm-hmm. I don't need nobody to talk about my money.
That's,
but I see, to your point, brother man, I think you're old enough to where you understand financial, right? How can you tell a how's a kid coming out of college?
I've been doing since I was selling flowers on the side of the freeway.
But if your mom wasn't making millions, how could your mom tell you? Are you going to be like, yo, mom, you wasn't making this, right? I showed my mom my tax return. She's like, oh, shit, I haven't made that in 2 years. You know what I'm saying? So, like, when people don't make that much money around you, I think a lot of kids be like, you know what? They don't know, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, they kind of be like, ah, whatever, you know? So, it's like, who's teaching these kids, you know, daily, you know? Because me coming in the locker room with a rookie, be like, yo, what's up, big dog? You good? Yo, make sure you save about 80% of your money, you know, 20% you spend on, you know, say about 80%. He'll be like, you're crazy.
Yeah, I was saying, then do they walk away from you because you're no fun?
No, then they pull up with that Jag, and I'm looking at him like, bro, you can't afford that. You live in an apartment. How are you paying for your mom? You know what I mean? It's just like,
right.
You just, yeah. It's like, ah, leave, bro. You well, did that me that. And Bobby, like, oh, I'm going to be like that now. I did that. When I saw Bond, I was like, oh, shit, I'm doing that. I'm getting these Louis bags. I'm getting this crib. I'm getting these cars. And then I looked at the zeros on our checks. I was like, oh, man, I'm missing a lot. So, you know, just got to be real with yourself.
Right, yeah. Right. And I think that's where you start to use examples. You know, it's one thing to tell a young guy something, but then it's another to actually back it up with facts and things that you can use experience, you know, to say, hey, the reason why I'm telling you this is X, Y, Z. Let me tell you what the mistakes I made. Let me tell you what I did, where I messed up. And that way, you know, eventually.
But you know, time, some people got to learn the hard way, brother.
It's about,
absolutely.
It's about absolutely.
Me, it's about leadership and guidance. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like, you know, taking care of a kid. It's almost like, you know, a teacher or this, that, and the third. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You have to have the patience. You have to have the want to try to educate someone, because if you expect them to get it on the first shot, then you're selling yourself short. It's not going to happen. You got to keep doing it. Keep giving your time. Keep sharing your scars. Keep trying to, you know, let them know that you want to see them do right, and this is how they do it, and let them make their mistakes. But the thing that you're not trying to stop them from making mistakes. You're just trying to minimize the mistakes that they're going to make. And that's the main thing that you want to do. Because if you come to someone that has been excited about spending this money or making this money or having this car or having this house, and you come up to them and say, no, you can't do that, they're going to fight you. But if you find a way to elaborate what you're trying to say and try to minimize the mistakes that they're going to make and understand, you know, think bigger. You know what I'm saying? We think in being rich right now versus being wealthy later. It's the difference between those two words.
Absolutely.
And it's a reason why, you know, Bill Gates and all those guys have the money that they have. Robert Smith, let me say something black too. And so, you know, we have to, again, as leaders, as, you know, people that have wealth, come from wealth, have, you know, made those mistakes, we have to be able to have that patience with them as well, because I'm pretty sure at some point in your life, you had somebody that was a mentor to you that you did not listen to right away, but they stayed focused. They put in the time, and at some point it clicked. Now you're just trying to make sure that whenever that some point that clicked is a lot sooner than you did. And if it's sooner than you did, you won.
Facts.
100%. 100%.
Players Campbell. Players Campbell came up to me when I was in Jacksonville his first year. How much money are you saving? How much money you got? I got this much. I got this much. How much money are you saving? What you doing? What you do? What investment you got? It's like,
yeah.
Like every day, I'm like, damn, play and stay on my financials, brother. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's great leadership, though.
Yeah. Exactly. You realize, what's up? Like, he gets you thinking about it.
That's, you know, what's up. You get a lot of players, man. You get a lot of players only focus on themselves. Mm-hmm. You know,
I mean, or focus so much on taking care of their family, they don't realize how much they're dishing out to the people who don't care. Like, it might be friends and all that.
Everybody's at a different stage in their life, so their ears their ears last year might be different than they are this year. So you have to be mindful of that. Everybody's not ready for the information that you're giving them, but if you continue to give that information, at some point it will click. And when it, you know, as it clicks, we'll start seeing some changes.
Our money manager, me and Bobby's money manager, goes, if you want to live how you're living now when you're 50. If you can live how you're living now, buy the things you're buying now. When you're 50, you're good. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
But if you're living how you're living now and you lose it by your 50, you're done. You know, you're going to be done. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I want to take a quick break, but we'll stay with the NFL with our next topic just briefly. We should come up with a name for this, like Turbo Trivia or something like that. Like, you know, like T-Squared Turbo Trivia. You will call it Turbo Trivia for today. I like that, actually. Turbo Trivia.
Actually, I got to hop off. You know what I'm saying?
All right, B-Wax.
I appreciate you guys. It's been
an
amazing conversation.
No worries.
Respect our opinions. I'm grateful to be on here. Turb, my dog.
My brother.
You already know.
For life. Yes, sir.
Everybody stay blessed. And stay safe.
Absolutely. I appreciate you, bro.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you.
Let me just...
All right, y'all. That's B-Wags clacking off.
And then there were four.
Yep. Guys, I'm going to hit y'all with this trivia. I don't know how much y'all into music. Okay? This is a music trivia question that I got for y'all, all right? Actually, you know what? We'll save this for the end. Since Bobby hopped off, we'll save it for the end. Yeah, we'll save it for the end.
But you got me so excited.
I know.
We've been streaming for a minute and 12 minutes, so we only got like 15 minutes left.
That's all right. Let's talk about – I just want to real quickly talk about the Redskins, the name change of the Redskins. You know, guys, it took me a little while to understand the reasons of it because for a little bit I thought like, well, you know, Redskins, I thought maybe –
Wait, hold on, Rob. Can we – I want to get their opinions first, though, before you and I go in. You know, right? Like
– Yeah, okay.
Because you and I have had such good conversation about this for a while.
Right.
That I feel like it would sway, you know?
Yeah, James, you know, we'll start with you. What do you think about the Redskins changing their name?
I think it's a good idea for them to change their name. Unfortunately, it took all of this for them to change their name. And that just shows you again how embedded racism is in the fibers of this country.
Mm-hmm. Right. Is there a reason why you feel the name should have been changed, should be changed?
Oh, yeah. It should be changed because it's offensive to those of the Indian heritage. And the only reason it's being changed now is because you have corporate sponsors like FedEx and others saying, hey, we're going to pull these $100 million endorsements away from you. You know what I mean? So now they want to do it, but that's the sad part, that they would that it would take money and not they wouldn't do it for the right reason, do the right thing for the right reasons.
Right. Malik, what do you think? What do you think about the name change for the Redskins?
Ms. Bridget, can I call you white skin without you being offended?
I'm very not offended. I get offended by sexist jokes.
But my point is, like, calling anybody, call me a black skin.
I'm sorry. You meant, I get what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah.
But also, exactly.
But also,
Redskin is extra offensive because that's how they actually referred to them, like, back in the day. So it's
but I think
in a negative way.
In a negative way.
It's everything else that they've done to those people. They skinned them, scalped them, and did everything else. So it's what comes with that while they were doing it. So let's
gotta continue
to put in the historical context.
And gave them dead land.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow. They're being called red skin.
There's a reason. The red skin means something.
That's like saying, I don't know if I said the niggers. Essentially. They're calling these people by a derogatory term. You know, now Black Hawk, Indian, you know, I'm okay with those if you're giving money to the nations. But Redskin is totally unacceptable.
See,
totally unacceptable.
And I learned that this morning because at first I thought, you know, honestly, I thought, I'm like, man, like, isn't it kind of empowering the Native American, you know, culture, you know, or whatever? And then I found out that, well, the actual term Redskin, similar to what you said, Malik, is like saying the N-word. Like, it's a derogatory statement to that culture.
But it's confusing because so many people have tried to make it so positive over the years. That's why it's so confusing and people didn't know. And also because the craziest part is that when they were first forming the logos, they worked with somebody from the closest Native American tribe to form the logo. So they think it's okay. And well, you know what I mean?
It's like us saying the N-word is a term of endearment.
Right.
You got me fucked up, right? it's nowhere near term of endearment. Now, if you said niggas, N-E-G-U-S, okay. But to N-I-G-G-A,
like you're talking about Michael Blackston?
Yeah, but by no means is the N-word a term of endearment, in my opinion. And neither is that an acceptable term. You can give people, especially when the white man killed these people in that capital. You know what I mean? It's like, holy shit, you know, like, what the fuck? But I don't know. For that to be the capital and that to be named the Redskins, it's almost like you're kind of laughing at them. You know what I mean?
The
like,
fact that it's the capital, great point. Like, I didn't even think about that. I didn't think about that.
100%.
Yeah, you're almost like saying this was their land, but it's mine now.
Right.
Well, they've got a couple options. I think I saw like the Warriors or the Senators, something like that. You guys got any suggestions for them?
There was like the Red Wolves or something.
Why don't we move away from the Sharks? The land, I don't know, like let's get an animal. Why are you trying to pick a people that we've destroyed and continue? Like their women are getting taken at alarming rates. Are the Redskins organization giving money to find those people? Like what are we talking about? You know what I mean?
I feel you.
It's crazy.
That's
this
real.
This isn't the 20s when it was okay to be like this and it's acceptable. You know, it's not.
Right. Okay, not. Malik, I'm going to put you on the spot here then.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to put you on the spot. It's coming. You know it is. But here's your time. Okay, so everybody saw DeSean Jackson come out earlier this week with the stuff he posted, and it was pictures of fake quotes from Hitler, and a lot of people were saying that, you know, he was supporting his action. It was very confusing, and people were all over the place, and a lot of people were very angry. With your response and how you felt like you handled it on social media, what do you want to say to the people, and where do you think DeSean's mind was?
I think his mind was to throw thought and have a conversation. You know, it's one of those things that, it's like I said earlier, you know, we can't talk about the past. It's almost like, oh, don't say his name, you know, but when we compare it as a people to not even compare, like you can't even compare the two struggles, right? But to try to put them parallel to each other, it's almost like one, you don't even talk about, we leave it alone, yet it's in every history book. These people have their own communities, they have a whole country that no other country is in. They have their own state. America's moved their capital to Israel to pretty much kick the Palestinians, you know, make them less than. It's like, but then we say slavery, get over it. You know, reparations, oh, get over that. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like, back to DJ. I think it's he just wanted to promote conversation and thought. And I feel like what did the organization do when Roddy Cooper called, said the N-word? They gave him a new contract that same year. So, you know, it's almost comical. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, Hitler, like, are you going to burn every copy of that book since it has Hitler in it? You can't. That's outrageous. So for him to say, I agree he should have wrote something under that to say how he feels, you know? But to consider somebody anti-Semite because they have different ideas than you is total BS. I think the epitome of America is a melting pot, you know? So it's one of those things that people are going to be different ideas. But as a black man, for me, to feel like great to call somebody a racist, it has no teeth. But you call somebody anti-Semite, oh my God, I can't, I'm sorry. It's like, nah, fuck that, bro. You know, I don't think he meant that. I know DJ, I don't even think he knows what that word meant before today. before he got that. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that's where his mind was at. Our owner is of Jewish faith and our GM is of Jewish faith. He would not dare.
Exactly. A lot of people and a lot of people didn't even realize that. Well, and something that was really impactful to me is I read Jemele Hill's article on The Atlantic, and it was really strong. And, you know, she said some things back in the day, even still now, that are very controversial. But the way that she handled Deshaun's words, I thought were so powerful, and the way she put them. And she basically said, gosh, I thought I wrote it down here, but she basically said that, God, there is this ignorance or some sort of a blind spot that some cultures have to other cultures, so that the Black culture may have to the Jewish culture. What do you think of that?
Like, we don't, like, blind spot, you mean like we don't think?
Like, the blind side to like what may be offensive and what may not. Because, like, she had said something back in the day that was very offensive and had to, and learned, and then had to take it back. Now, Deshaun is learning, and, you know, he's going to go and visit a concentration camp with a Holocaust survivor, I think. What does that make you think?
It makes
one thing that I think.
Go ahead.
One thing I think about that is, I think, again, you have powers supported in white inferiority that are always trying to demasculate a Black man. And they're always trying to pull you into their world. Hey, come look over here and look at our Holocaust. No, let me take you to Alabama and let me show you this lynching museum and tell you about my history here that's still going on for 480 years. And I feel like this, if you say it and you can substantiate it, then you need to stand on it. And again, as we see my sisters from Black Lives Matter put their lives and their freedom on the line, then you ask yourself as a man, damn, what am I doing? When am I going to take a stand for what I believe in?
Because
we talk about, they're always trying to pull us into their world. Okay, I understand they had
their, well, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case. I mean, I don't think it's right for anybody to have been kept in a concentration camp in less than 80 years ago.
I don't think it's right either, but I don't think that it was right for someone to call a family and a community out there while one family has a picnic and the other family is over here watching while they put horses on one side and pull their bodies apart strictly because of the race of the skin of their color. I don't think that's right. I don't think it's right to use babies for alligator bait. I don't think it's right. I don't think it's right that you have Brock Turner who received probation and you have another man who received 30 years. I don't think it's right.
Yeah, I think back to that. It's one of those things that I think if we can, really, I think the Jewish faith, I personally envy them, because everything they came through almost got decimated. They came back. They stayed to themselves. They you don't hear about them, you know, harming each other. They're a straight community. Mm-hmm. They spend their money in their own communities. They have their own schools.
Absolutely.
They have everything, right? So I personally envy that, right? So I think D-Jack was saying, what I'm saying is that I want that for my community, right? But when you have somebody in Palmdale, a Black man that got lynched, and they're talking about it was a suicide, it's almost hysterical. You know what I'm saying? To be like, to think that. So I personally think that, like I said, it's hard to talk about the past because everybody's so sensitive. Like, nobody wants to talk about the hard things. But we as Black people, we have to live it every day, you know? We want to talk about, we don't even know our history, yet these group of people have their own history in their history books.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't know anything. Exactly. We have a month, if that, a day, really. Yep. So you talk about Harry Tubman and Martin Luther King.
And add into what you said, Malik, of course, it's okay for everyone to glory and to glorify, even when you talk about, I have Armenian business partners. Every year in Los Angeles, they have Armenian Genocide Day. But when it comes to Blacks, forget about it. Do you understand what I'm saying? The hypocrisy. Right. But we have to have a real life conversation, and people are going to be uncomfortable. But this is the reality, and everyone is always trying to compare
what goes on where they were with what's going on with us every day. There's no comparison nowhere on this earth to the way black people are treated everywhere across this continent. When we go to Leopold, cutting off kids and killing kids based on the fact of they couldn't get rubber. Come on now, let's be honest. So what we have done is we have dehumanized the black people and we victimize and humanize everybody else. So let's just be honest. What about us?
Right. Yeah. You know what? And yeah, those are great perspectives. I mean, you guys are really, really passionate. I really appreciate like the passion that you guys have and speaking about, you know, what's going on in our culture, you know, and just being honest about it and speaking the truth. You know, we're gearing towards the end of the show here. I want to shift gears. Let's do something fun. I put some things together.
Save my facial expression. I'm all like fucking frowning.
I put something together. I had a game for us. It's called Who Said That? And it was going to be based on Kobe, LeBron, and Michael Jordan. But I'll do the trivia. Let's do the trivia that I had here.
Yeah, because I'm sorry. I gotta go to the bathroom. It was this White Claw that did me in.
I gotta feed this little girl. So I'm
yeah.
I gotta bounce.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do the trivia real quick.
Okay.
Five artists who have had a song in the top 40. Okay. Five artists who have had a song in the top 40 in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s. Can you 80s. Name
five?
All four of those decades. Five artists have had songs in the top 40 in all four of those decades.
In the 80s, 90s, and 2010s?
Yep. Can you name who they are?
It's 2010s.
Wait, 2000s or 2010s? Sorry.
Both.
Oh, okay. Four decades. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, okay. Four decades. Yep.
I'll be right there. Hold on.
Michael Jackson.
R. Kelly. Michael.
Okay.
Okay.
Michael Jackson, that's one.
It is? Yes.
Yeah, Michael Jackson is one.
Is R. Kelly not one? I'm going to stop saying his name.
Oh,
R. Kelly's definitely not one. No.
2000.
Is Whitney Houston one? Or would she not?
That's close, but no. You got to think about it. You know, 80s, they were popular in the 80s, 90s.
Come on, James. It's your generation. Big dog, what's up, man?
For real. In the 2010s. A couple of these are going to surprise you.
Ooh,
Aerosmith?
No. Good guess, though.
The Isley Brothers?
Another good guess. No. Madonna?
Oh, duh.
Madonna is one other one. So we got Michael Jackson and Madonna.
You're talking about pop artists.
Cher?
So we're looking at rap.
We're talking about Cher's a good guess, but no. And it's all genres. It's all genres. None of them are hip hop. Michael Jackson, Madonna. I'll give you another one. You too.
Yeah, no, that's who I was thinking of. That's what I meant.
U2's another one.
Yeah. Don't say the last one.
There's two more.
There's two more.
U2, Michael Jackson, Madonna. There's two more.
Can you give us genres?
I'll give you the next person is also a comedian.
I don't know.
And he's weird.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah, there you go. Weird Al
Yankovic.
No
way.
Yeah. I've never heard of him.
Had a top 40? Oh, my God.
Top 40. All four decades.
Okay.
What song does he have in 2010?
Probably one of those weird, like, where he had, like, you know.
Okay, the last one is U2, the group U2. U2.
He already said that.
I said U2 already. That was a good guess, though. I said you two already.
What's the genre of the last one? And then we'll wrap it up here.
So Yankovic, first top 10 Billboard album, Straight Outta Linwood, and single White and Nerdy were both released in 2006.
I remember White and Nerdy. Oh,
his latest album, Mandatory Fun, was in 2014. Okay, the last one is a saxophonist. Plays a saxophone. Jazz artist. Very popular. Yes, you do, Malik.
Yes, my mom listens to him?
Probably.
Who's on the list of sex?
Kenny Loggins?
A friend?
Okay, that's close. That's really close. First name is correct.
Or, sorry, I meant Kenny.
Can you go by first name?
Kenny, oh my gosh.
Come on, you said
Kenny Rogers?
What? You're saying no.
Kenny, what's his name? What's his name?
Kenny G.
Kenny G. That's what I meant. I meant Kenny G.
James was no help. That's who I meant, though.
That's who I was thinking of. That's who I was thinking of.
G for Gorlick.
Hey, at least I got the Kenny part right, okay?
Hey, you know what?
You're better than me.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys for coming on to the show, Malik. I know you gotta go feed the babies, man. Yes, I want to thank all the streamers for listening, everybody who tuned in, everybody who was a part of the comments and everything like that. I appreciate the streamers also chiming in the trivia. Always want to do something fun at the end of the show. Guys,
and
take
make sure
care.
If you didn't hear the whole thing, go and check out our podcast, Turbo Talk, on anywhere you listen to podcasts. Go search it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify. It's called Turbo Talk.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and if you also
thank you guys for the platform, man. My bad. Thank you guys for the platform, man. I hope everybody, you know, out there respects, you know, what we have to say and our points of view. I think everybody's here willing to learn and change. But, you know, I just hope everybody, you know, enjoys themselves. And thank you guys for the chance to be on this platform and speak my mind. And,
And again, I don't condone any racial epithets or any racial slogan or anything for any race. I think that we all just need to take a look and understand each other and the value of what we all bring to this world. And again, everyone have a great day. Peace and love.
Peace and love, man. All right. Stay blessed. Stay safe, y'all. If you guys want to listen, watch this episode live, you can just go to twitch.tv/RobertJTurbin. You can re-watch the episode. You can also go to my YouTube channel. Really appreciate you guys. Thank you, Bridget, for everything that you do. The grills in my mouth double as a freezer. The grills in my mouth double as a freezer.